with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved. Here is Dr. James Houck.
Good evening, everybody, wherever you are in the world at this time. Welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity, finding one's courage to reclaim that which has always been in you. In fact, let's take that a little bit deeper. Finding one's courage to reclaim that which you have always been. I'm very excited to be with you here today and every other Wednesday evening at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And each and every one of these broadcasts focus on the integration of our mental health and spirituality, all within the context of our one, you know, with our oneness with ourselves, others, and God or the divine. I am Dr. James Houck. If you would like more information about me or to leave me your comments about today's show, I invite you to visit the website. It's www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. That's www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. That's all one word right there. And just in case you cannot spend the entire hour with me this evening, no worries. These pod broadcasts are now podcasted. In case you want to go back and listen again, or you can go back into the archives and listen to previous shows, just go back onto the website and click on the archives, and you'll see just a whole slew of podcasts, and just select the one that you like to listen to at your leisure. And these are also available for download for iTunes and iHeartRadio. So, well, I want to just take this time this evening and wish everybody out there an early happy 4th of July. And yes, everybody, please, please, please be safe this holiday weekend, because let's all keep in mind that however you plan to celebrate the 4th tomorrow, there are two words that do not belong in the same sentence: alcohol and fireworks. Okay? Don't put those two words in a sentence. In fact, don't even say something like, okay, here, hold my beer while I light my firecrackers. Don't even do that. Don't even go there. Okay. So not a good combination on the 4th, let alone any other time. Okay. Because unfortunately, 4th of July still ranks up there as the busiest day for emergency rooms and urgent care facilities. So everybody, please, safety first. So, on a lighter note, let's say that I always love to share a little bit about who I am and where I'm coming from. In case you're tuning in for the very first time, welcome aboard. And I just wanted to say that I have a solid belief that all of us come into the world already equipped and graced with everything that we need for in this life in terms of our giftedness or our skill, our talents, our strengths, our character traits, so on and so forth. And how we live our giftedness is in and through various relationships. And I often refer to relationships as the common denominator. Like, it doesn't matter what we do, or, you know, how old we get, or, you know, our skills, our talents, and so forth. The best way that they are understood is in and through these relationships. And this aspect is very important when considering who we are and remembering who we are. Because although we may have similar gifts, or we may have similar skills and talents and strengths and character traits and so forth, no two people express these identically. I mean, in other words, each of us have a thisness about ourselves that cannot be duplicated. Oh, people try and imitate how we do things and vice versa, but really, nobody has the ability to duplicate us, and we cannot duplicate others, because within us lies what the 12th century scholar John Duns Scotus referred to as a hachaetos, a thisness, a uniqueness, if you will. And the best way I can describe this to the kids and teens that I counsel is in the image of a thumbprint. We all have a thumbprint, but no two are alike. Therefore, they all have a thisness, but no two are alike. And the importance of this realization of who we truly are, and I will be sharing, you know, about three stories that illustrate this concept beautifully and really bring out this achaitas, this thisness that we all have. Well, it is quite unfortunate that millions of people really never have a chance to discover their uniqueness because, I mean, let's face it, we're often told to look for that uniqueness in all the wrong places. I mean, in other words, we're told to look for that thisness in all the externals of life, or let's say in the accumulation of things or the accomplishments or the accolades. But this is not where our thisness, our uniqueness, and hachaitas is to be found. Instead, this full expression of who we are is to be found within the deep realization and the full experiences with ourselves as a soul. And yet, when you think about it, we often receive our deepest physical and emotional, psychological, even spiritual wounds in these relationships. And moreover, we often go along in life and maybe due to some unpleasant experiences, we may tend to hide our giftedness. We may tend to hide our uniqueness, our hachaitas, such as when we give up and give in to the labels and the stereotypes that, in a sense, what others want us to be for them so that they feel good about themselves. Or we may push our giftedness, our uniqueness, our chaitas way down inside of us so that others cannot see it. Because perhaps we started to bring out our uniqueness and that may have been exploited or ridiculed or shamed in some way. And so we just decided to avoid that pain. And so we pushed our giftedness way down. Then perhaps it was just clearly hidden from us as well. Or perhaps we were told that we may never amount to anything, or whatever other voice that you heard telling you that there's really nothing special to you. And that's just wrong, because everybody has a uniqueness. Everybody has a thisness. And speaking of these relationships, I mean, ironically, the relationships that cause us a lot of wounding, let's say, these relationships just might be within our own families, our coworkers, our institutions, and friends. I mean, we assume that the people who are supposed to love us the most just might actually be the ones who hurt us because of their unhealed wounds and their underdeveloped selves. Still, it's not lost, because there's power in seeking healing and this inner transformation and the direct realization of ourselves as soul. Because whenever we transform, we also transform others by our presence and our grace and our understanding. But forgiveness and kindness and compassion begin with how we treat ourselves. Because when we are compassionate with ourselves, we then can become more compassionate with others. And when we are more forgiving of ourselves and with ourselves, we then can be more forgiving with others. And when we're able to live in gratitude with ourselves, we then discover how this really opens up our hearts to see and to live in gratitude with others. And when we are able to truly know ourselves as a soul, and we live from our soul, it definitely, definitely opens us up to understand the potential in others to see themselves as a soul. So all in all, first and foremost, transformation begins with us. And this is what reclaiming authenticity is all about. This is actually where I came up with the title for these podcasts. You know, it actually can be summed up in one word, namaste, which roughly translated means, because I see myself as a soul of light, this allows me to greet your lighted soul of who you are, even if you don't see it in yourself. Let me say that again. Namaste. Because I see myself as a soul of light, this allows me to greet your lighted soul of who you are, even if you don't see it in yourself. Okay? Very important. Very subtle, but very important. So, all in all, how's your heart today? How is your heart today, this third day of July? Well, I hope it is well. I hope you are well. And I hope that even if you are struggling or hurting today, that you would find rest and comfort and the peace that you need. And if you've been listening to these shows for some time, you may ask yourself, you know, why do I always ask about your hearts? Well, there's a simple explanation for this. According to the researchers at the Heart Math Institute, the more traditional way of studying communication pathways between the head and the heart has led scientists to focus primarily on the heart's responses to the brain's instructions. However, folks at the Heart Math Institute have now discovered that communication between the heart and the brain is actually a dynamic. It's ongoing. It's a two-way dialogue with each organ continuously influencing the other's function. And for example, their research has shown that the heart communicates to the brain in four major areas. It communicates to the brain neurologically or through the transmission of nerve impulses. It communicates biochemically through hormones and neurotransmitters. It communicates to the brain biophysically through the pressure of waves, and it also communicates energetically through electromagnetic field interactions. Kind of a mouthful there, but the heart communicates with the brain energetically. And communication along these channels, neurologically, biochemically, biophysically, and energetically, significantly affects the brain's activity. And the heart math researchers have shown that these messages that the heart sends to the brain can also affect performance. So, all in all, listen to your hearts, but they have a lot to say. All right. Well, if you're a fan of Disney movies, which I am, and my favorite Disney movie is The Lion King. I know there's others out there, but this happens to be my favorite. Anyway, if you're a fan of these Disney movies, you know, one of the more memorable scenes in a particular Disney movie, Aladdin, is when the genie tries to explain to Aladdin that being a genie isn't all that it's cracked up to be. I mean, come on, you know the story. Aladdin was banished to the Cave of Wonders, only to discover this dust-covered lamp. And, of course, curiosity gets the better of Aladdin, and he takes out a rag, and he starts to wipe off this lamp, and he puts a little shine to it, and then all of a sudden, out pops this genie who says he'll grant him three wishes, along with a nice little song and dance. Okay, I mean, after all, it was the voice of Robin Williams, so of course you're going to get a little song and dance, okay? Now, despite the awesomeness and the power to grant wishes, this genie appears to be sad, you know, stating to Aladdin, well, yeah, he has phenomenal cosmic powers, but since he's tethered to his lamp, he's confined to this itty-bitty living space. So, in other words, without the lamp, he cannot exist. That is, unless somebody wishes for him to no longer be a genie. And the story of the genie, Aladdin, and the lamp has always reminded me of who we are as embodied souls. Yes, we are souls that are in a body. But where I disagree with Aladdin is that although the genie is tethered to his lamp for his existence, the soul isn't tethered to the body for its existence, okay? We are not tethered to the body for our existence as soul, okay? And we often forget this fact because we tend to place more of an emphasis on the physical rather than the soul. You know, but the truth is that we are so much more than what we have become so far, and therefore we have yet to, let's say, fully realize that we are eternal. And we are vast. And yes, it's true that the body needs rest. It needs food, it needs water, it needs exercise, and at times it needs medicine. But again, our true self is soul, eternal, immeasurable, and without form. And the body gives form to the formless soul. The body is temporary, whereas the soul is eternal. And I've had teachers and friends along the way explain this embodied soul using another metaphor. And they would always say to me, think of it this way. The next time you fill a bottle, a clear bottle with water, take a closer look at it. The bottle represents the body, and the water represents the soul. So the water doesn't need the bottle for its existence. Okay? And the deeper lesson for us in all this is that when we are able to truly see ourselves as soul, and ultimately, when we are able to realize ourselves as souls, when we begin to see others as souls, we're no longer willing to accept relating to people as anything less than them also being souls. And there's also another story that helps explain this false notion that we are limited. Okay, and it comes, you know, from the Indian tale of the washerman and the donkeys. I've shared this story on more than one occasion, but it certainly fits here. So indulge me as I share this story one more time. Now, once upon a time, there was a man who lived hundreds of years ago. And being a simple man, his occupation was that of a washerman. One who goes around and he collects people's dirty laundry, and he loads them on his donkey, and then he takes them down to the river and he washes the laundry and he lays them out on large rocks to dry. And then when the clothes are dry, he folds the laundry and then he heads home and returns the laundry to his customers. Well, one day when he was collecting the laundry and taking it down to the river to wash them, he realized he had forgotten the rope which he would tie the donkey to a tree so that it wouldn't run off while he was washing the laundry. And he was so beside himself because now he would lose a whole day's wage if he had to go back home and get his rope. And he just didn't know what to do. And as he was standing there just trying to figure out, you know, what am I going to do, a wise man walked by and asked if he was all right. And the washerman explained the situation to this man about forgetting his rope so he couldn't tie the donkey, and I can't go back because I'm going to lose a whole day's wage and I can't afford that, and so on and so forth. And the wise man just smiled and he said to the washerman, "Sir, don't worry, because I have an idea. Why don't you just pretend to tie the donkey to this tree here?" What do you mean, just pretend? Yes, just pretend to go through the motions of tying your donkey to the tree. However, make sure he sees you do this. Well, as ridiculous as it sounded, the washerman did just that. He pretended to tie his donkey to the tree and make sure the donkey was watching him just go through the motions. And then he took his laundry down to the river and he started to wash them. And every now and then, the washerman would look back at the tree just to see what the donkey was doing. And the donkey was still there, eating grass and acting as if it's tied to the tree. And the donkey was perfectly content. And when the washerman was finished with his laundry for the day, he loaded up his donkey and then he gave the command for the donkey to move. But the donkey didn't move. It acted as if it had been tied to the tree all day long. And now the washerman thought he was really in a bind because now he can't even get his donkey to move. So he runs to and fro and he finds this wise man who told him to pretend tying his donkey to the tree in the first place. Well, he found this man and he explained the situation that now the donkey refuses to move because it still thinks it's tied to the tree. And the wise man replied to the washerman that, again, it's a solution. And just as you pretended to tie the donkey to the tree, now you need to pretend to untie your donkey from the tree. Only make sure the donkey watches you do this. So the washerman shook his head in just disbelief, and he goes back to the donkey, and he starts to pretend that he's untying the donkey, and he made sure the donkey was watching him. And then, with a stern voice, he gave the command for the donkey to move, and he and the donkey started to walk back home. Now, on the surface, we might think to ourselves that the donkey in this story was just plain stupid, you know, being tricked into thinking that it was actually tied when it was not. But when you think about this, all the washerman did was simply, you know, go through the motions of tying and untying his donkey, which actually worked. And my friends in India have often used this story to demonstrate how their Vedanta scriptures say that this exemplifies classic human behavior. They say, you know, that humanity thinks that they are the body and the mind and the intellect. And all these things need to be nurtured. Like I said, you know, the body gets tired. The body needs to be fed. The body needs some medicine from time to time. Or is it our duty to provide the desires and the pampering of these things? I mean, because we all like leisure. Just watch what you do tomorrow, you know, with it being the 4th of July. You're going to have a cookout, or you're going to get together with family. Then you're going to sit around when it gets dark and you're going to watch a firework. Okay, there's pleasure in those things. Nothing wrong with that. But what my friends often stress to me is that because people over-identify themselves with the body, that humanity works day and night, night and day, to meet these needs or to provide pleasure and running after various temptations. Because humanity thinks that, well, if I don't nurture my body, I'm going to die. And as a result, humanity has put restrictions around themselves. So, in other words, like the donkey, humanity thinks it's in some sort of servitude or bondage that is tied to a tree. So humanity doesn't know that we're not the body and the mind and the intellect. We're independent of those things. And there are no restrictions on us, no bondages. And even if the body dies, we, as souls, will not die. Because Vedanta tells humanity, that the body and the soul are not one. They're different. And we are so limited in our understanding that we are bound by what we see and feel and hear and taste and touch that we think that's all there is. Again, it's more of what don't we understand? Not a fault issue here, but it's more of what don't we get? So we, like the donkey, end up believing this illusion that we are limited or restricted simply because we were told by another that we are. And unfortunately, we take that illusion on as our identity, and we act accordingly, believing that, you know, in this life, it's as good as it's going to get. And I see this quite a bit in counseling people who identify themselves and their problems and illnesses. You know, they're not aware of being more than what they have become so far in their life. So they often accept this distorted template that's been laid over top of their lives. And as a result, people tend to beat themselves up for making the same mistakes over and over again in choices and relationships and life. And yet, going back to this story, the donkey that is free all the time, he thinks that he's tied to the tree. So similarly, on a metaphysical level, we who are souls, you know, we may tend to think that we're tied to the body. And therefore, well, it's just too hard of a concept to imagine ourselves living as a soul. So we believe that we have to find the key to this prison. And this key, so to speak, is that we just need more money, or we need freedom, or we need to live out our passions, or we need to find true love, or any other desire. But what if we are already free? What if there is no rope? What if there is no tree? What if the illusion of being in a prison is an illusion? Now, I don't want to come across as one who minimizes another person's pain or problems and struggles, but let's think for a moment. How might we be empowered if we truly see ourselves as solutions to our problems by removing the layers of this conditioning, or let's say in this case, the imaginary ropes that keep us tied to our problems, that keep us tied to the tree? I mean, what keeps us bound to toxic relationships? What keeps us thinking that there's nothing more to us because we have been told this about ourselves all of our lives? So in other words, if you think you are weak, you become weak. And if you think that you're a victim, well, you're going to become a victim. I mean, most people have accepted their inner weaknesses to the point that they are attached to them. I mean, they don't ever come out of their self-created illusions. And maybe by looking at ourselves more closely and examining our motives and our assumptions and limited perspectives, we just might realize that the first step towards a lasting transformation is to first acknowledge the illusion of this oppression, that it's perhaps all in our minds. I mean, even let's take it one step further here, that we might be even be in a physical prison. But if we find our true nature, that we are eternal souls, then no amount of a so-called earthly limitation can convince us that we are limited, inadequate, or restricted. Well, I would really love to hear what's on your heart about this subject. So again, if you would like to call in, that number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And I'll be taking your calls after this short break. Again, you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, and I'm your host, Dr. James Houck. I'll be back with you in 1 minute. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Dr. James Houck, and you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Tonight's broadcast is focusing on the phenomenal cosmic powers, itty-bitty living space. And earlier in the show, I was talking about a story that's often used to demonstrate how a donkey that is free all the time think that it's tied to a tree, just because I saw somebody go through the motions, and like I'm tying you to the tree. And similarly, on a metaphysical level, we who are souls may think that we are tied to the body, that our soul is captive, so to speak, and that seems to be the concrete truth. But at a physical level, we are bound to this endless desire to acquire things, such as beauty or spiritual experiences, as if we need to collect them, or knowledge or wealth or fame or success or whatever it is that we chase after, as well as the enjoyment of those acquired objects, and as well as the avoidance of the negatives in our lives, such as bad relationships or financial problems and so forth. And why this is an important distinction to make is that, as my India friends explained to me, that people are already in a relationship with all things and all people, including God. They just don't know it yet. In other words, people often walk around in ignorance of who they truly are. And therefore, it's a matter of realizing that we are souls, that we are vast, and we are formless. In fact, I've talked with my friends in India and you know, several times, and we have some very interesting conversations about sin and ignorance. And whereas others see sin as people, you know, are being bad or evil, or they believe that people, my Indian friends, they believe that people act out of ignorance of who they truly are, and therefore they commit evil acts because they have not realized themselves and others as souls. They don't fully grasp the kind of impact their thoughts and their words and their actions have on themselves as well as others. And once they fully grasp this and they are transformed by this, they clearly see the dynamic between wounding and healing. I mean, every thought, every word, every action, every behavior, you know, has the potential to heal or hurt or nurture or wound. And this is where, as I talked about in other podcasts, this is where the echo comes in. So I try to explain this to kids, you know, it's like they understand the cave. They understand that if they say hello, you know, in a cave, that sooner or later, they're going to hear their voice bounce back to them. Okay. So in other words, you know, we live in cave. We live in an echo, that whatever we send out, thoughts, words, actions, it's going to come back to us in one form or another. So as I was thinking about this more today, I was just reminded of the Bible verse of, I think it's in 2 Corinthians chapter 10, where it talks about the importance of bringing every thought captive under control. You know, we have to be careful with our thoughts because our thoughts are energy. We have to be careful with our words because our words are energy. And certainly we have to be careful with our behavior because definitely behavior is energy. And so even though I've been focusing on the negative aspects of this, that if we send out like negative thoughts, it's going to bounce back to us in negativity. But if we send out good thoughts, if we send out healing thoughts, or our words are kind and nurturing, and so is our behavior, well, that's going to come back to us as well. And I have, I'll just take a little side road here, just quickly. You've heard me say this before, that, you know, this is, I believe, is why people don't heal. You know, they want to heal, but they don't realize the potential that they have to hurt and wound others, thereby keeping themselves hurt and wounded. And so it's, you know, something that's very fascinating to see. It's quite the phenomena that, you know, as we're transformed and as we are sending out thoughts that are good and wonderful and healing, or we act in ways that seek to heal and nurture one another, we also reap the benefit of that. That we attract what we send out, and we live in that echo. Okay. But getting back to sin and the Eastern-Western differentiation of that, whereas my India friends say, you know, in Eastern spirituality, it's more of an ignorance, that you just don't really know who you are. And therefore, of course, you're going to do things according to this distorted template that you have, you know. But once you realize you're a soul, going to make all the difference in the world. You're not going to hurt others. You know, you're going to be very careful with your thoughts and your words and your actions. And yet, on the other hand, in Western spirituality, this concept of sin tells people that they're wrong or that they've done something wrong, and therefore they need to eliminate the sin in order to be in a right relationship with God and others. And for us, regardless of whatever religion it is, it's a matter of understanding how we live our lives with these superimposed notions, or I like to call them distorted templates, that we're all bodies and minds. Yes, we have bodies and minds, okay? But if we believe that that's all there is to us, you know, and then maybe, hopefully, someday we'll get to go to heaven. I've seen this in Christianity and other major religions, that people are afraid to walk in this newness of life. You know, they're forgiven of their sins and they are in a right relationship with God, but it's, I don't know how to live this out, because they still believe they're tied to the tree, so to speak. But you know, didn't Jesus once say that the kingdom of God is in you? Yeah, maybe we haven't realized that yet. Perhaps we just don't know how to embrace it, let alone how do we fully walk in the newness of life and relationship with ourselves and others and God. But you know, what a difference it would make in our lives, in the lives of humanity at large, if we see this illusion for what it is, and we untie the limitations of this donkey mind, and we dissolve the ignorance of who we are, and we begin to walk in the freedom that has always been within us. Think about that. What a difference it would make in our lives if we saw this illusion for what it is. We untie the limitations of the donkey mind, we dissolve the ignorance of who we think we are, and we walk in the freedom that has always been within us. And herein lies the great lesson, a great lesson to be learned regarding recognizing who we are as souls. Because on this level, there are many illusions that have been, let's say, superimposed, that all we are is this particular body, with a set of feelings and thoughts, and taking in the external world around us. And ours is a world whereby we are familiar with these superimposed images all the time. And basically, to superimpose just generally means to place or lay something over or above on another image. I mean, photographers are familiar with this term, you know, every day, and they may even use this technique all the time. Now, if you're a music lover, in the music recordings, it's called overdubbing, which is also known as layering, which is a technique in which audio tracks that have been pre-recorded but then played back and incorporated into another track. Musicians do this all the time. Singers do this all the time. So when we believe that there's nothing more to us than this body and mind, or that we define ourselves according to our wounds or our scars and experiences, we're reinforcing this template or this superimposition of this illusion. Now, removing this illusion and realizing the underlying reality is called de-superimposition. And one of my favorite stories that really captures this is Looking for the Butter in Every Bowl of Milk. It's a Sikh story that was also told to me when I was over in India. And it was only told to me once, but it has stayed with me. Because again, where do we look to find God? Where do we look to find the soul? Well, we don't find it. We realize it. That is who we are. So looking for the butter in every bowl of milk. So as the story goes, there, you know, once lived a man who was quite rich. And he was a very, very wealthy man. And this man used to pray a lot. Every day he used to pray. He prayed in the morning, he prayed at mealtimes, and even at night he used to pray. But one day, a thought came to his mind, and he said to himself, you know, I pray to God. I always think about God. But I wonder, where is God? Where does God live? So he sent out a message to all the people in his kingdom, let's say, and he said that if anybody can tell me where God is, I will give them 100 gold coins. Well, the news got out that this rich man was going to offer 100 gold coins to anybody who could tell him where God was. And everybody wanted to try and tell him. And then they would tell him things like, oh, I can tell you where God is. God's in the mountains, or God's in the sky. God's in the heavens. God is here. God is there. God's in the sea. God's in faraway countries. But this wasn't quite what, you know, the rich man was looking for. And then one day, a very humble man came up to him. He's a very quiet man, but yet he was a very wise man. And everybody knew him as just a very quiet, very calm, and very humble person. And he says to the rich man, he says, "Sir, I know where God is." The wealthy man said, "Really? Will you please tell me, where is God?" And the wise man said, "Well, I just need you to bring me a bowl of milk." And the wealthy man didn't understand how that would help, but it seemed to be easy enough. So he called for this bowl of milk, and after the milk arrived, the wise man said, "Now, I want you to put your hand in the bowl of milk." So the rich ruler, he put his hand in the milk. And then the wise man asked him, "Sir, what do you see in the milk? What's in the milk?" "Well, I don't know. There's really nothing in the milk. It's just a bowl of milk." And so the wise man asked him again, "Are you quite sure that there is just milk in there?" "No," said the rich man. There's nothing in the milk. It's just a bowl of milk." So the wise man said, "Okay, now I want you to stir the milk with your hand." So he stirred the milk and, "Okay, keep going." And he stirred it. "Okay, keep going." And he stirred it and he stirred it and he stirred it. And he stirred it for such a long time that he had to take a rest. He had to take a break. But after he rested, he started to stir again. And he kept stirring and stirring and stirring and stirring and stirring and stirring and stirring. And eventually, would you believe it, from the same bowl of milk, now there was cream. And as he kept stirring, now there was butter. And these things came from the milk. And the rich man looked at the wise man and he said, "I don't understand. What's this point that you're trying to make? I asked you to tell me where God is, and you just got a bowl of milk, and you made me stir it. And yes, I can see the cream that came out of it, and then it turned into butter. So where's God?" And the wise man said, "Sir, God's not far away. God lives in you. And what we have to do sometimes is to churn ourselves. We churn our mind, our heart, our feelings, our soul. And slowly, within time, we'll see that God is inside of us, just like the butter is inside the milk. God is inside of us." Well, the rich man, when he thought about it, he fell to his knees. He bowed to the wise man, and he gave him his 100 gold coins. Well, you know, little did I realize, you know, after hearing this story for the first time, just how important it is to understand that the presence of God or the presence of the divine can be seen in everyone, especially in ourselves, in everyday life, in the ordinariness of life. Now, on the surface, we might find this teaching difficult because whenever we look at ourselves or when we look at others, you know, we may be tempted to say, "Well, all I see is just so much physical pain. All I hear are emotional wounds, or I see so much psychological sufferings or expressions of anger and violence. And I see in one turn after another lust and jealousy and brokenness and so on." But can we also see the potential for God's presence to transform these wounds into a life-giving means of creating the healing that we truly want to see in this world? Can we see the potential for the milk to be transformed into butter? Let alone, how can we transform dimensions of higher spiritual awareness? And yet, how many times do we struggle with seeing God in this world because we're unwilling to shift our focus? Or perhaps maybe we're too busy to quiet ourselves to listen for God's still, small voice. Or, you know, let's take this one step further. How many times do we wrongly assume that in order to see God, We must first make God conform to our vision, or our philosophy, or our worldview, or our prayers. In other words, that if God really wants a relationship with me, then it's going to have to be on my terms. And this is simply not the case. Because you see, God is not akin to the genie in Aladdin's lamp. And we don't obtain these things simply by rubbing a spiritual lamp, hoping to get three wishes. So, as the song goes, how do we see God more clearly? And how do we love God more dearly? And how do we follow God more nearly each day? Well, before we answer those questions, let me propose this idea. Perhaps before we ask the question, how? Maybe a better question would be for us to first understand from where inside the soul do these desires come? I mean, perhaps the desire to see and to love and to follow God actually come from a deeper place in us that words cannot express. Because you see, as we heal from our psychological and our emotional or physical, even spiritual wounds, we're going to begin to look at ourselves and others differently. And this is a very good beginning. However, when we're able to see what we're truly made of, that is light and soul, we begin to understand the true meaning of seeing the butter and the cheese, let's say, in the bowl of milk. Now, it may not be there at first glance, okay? We may just look and see, like, okay, there's milk in the bowl. But as we develop our relationship with God or the divine, and we heal from our woundedness, the butter emerges. The goodness of God emerges. The presence of God emerges. And here's the irony in all of this, that when we're truly able to see ourselves as souls, and ultimately when we're able to realize ourselves as soul, and we begin to see others as souls, then we're no longer willing to accept relating to people as anything less than them also being souls. I mean, how many times do we hear and see people calling for an end to violence and crime and poverty? And interestingly enough, humanity has always struggled with these issues, but has never quite looked for the answers in the right places. I mean, all too often has the focus been on the externals that have often caused such division in humanity since the beginning of time. It always seems like there always needs to be an us and a them. That there always needs to be an enemy, that there always needs to be a people to hate, that there always needs to be somebody to blame, and so on and so forth. But you know, all of these externals that humanity has focused on have produced these isms in the world today. There's sexism, there's racism, there's ageism, there's classism, there's egoism, and so on and so on and so on. But when we focus on the soul of the person, all of these isms fall away. I mean, because these isms simply cannot follow the language of the soul, because the soul is always found by looking inward. Then when we do that, and we truly embrace ourselves as soul, there is no more sexism. There is no more racism. There is no more ageism. There is no more egoisms, because isms do not have a voice in matters of the soul. We are all beautiful souls made in the image of God, full of inherent value, dignity, and worth. And yet, we struggle to accept this truth because our attention is often diverted to focus solely on outward appearances and behaviors. We're constantly tempted to compare ourselves to somebody else, and how am I doing compared to this person, and what's my bank account say compared to that person, and so on. And so, in other words, we all live with some degree of ignorance of our soul consciousness, and we may get glimpses of it here and there, but we may never attain the full extent, because the physical, emotional, and psychological issues cloud our vision of who we truly are. And yes, you know, the body has to contend with diseases and illnesses. We do feel physical and emotional pain with so much intensity at times that we just believe that we just can't take too much more. And there may be times when our lungs struggle to take a breath, or hunger and diseases that cause our stomach and intestines and bones and muscles and blood to scream in agony. And these experiences just might make us question whether or not we are the soul whom God has created. And yet, this illusion lies not in the suffering and pain and the agony that we may experience, but rather it's in our perception that there is nothing more to us than an emotional, intellectual, and physical body. Indeed, you know, the physical and emotional pain and suffering, yes, can temporarily drown out the cry of our soul, but our soul is never silenced. So furthermore, this truth is that the greatest strength of who we are as souls lies in the ability to transform and transcend these physical, emotional, and psychological limitations. Because you and I both know this, for as much as history has shown us the horrific crimes that humanity does to itself, there are just as many stories of humanity rising above such tragedies to heal and to reclaim and embrace themselves as a soul. I'm Dr. James Houck, and you have been listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Thank you for spending this evening with me. And like I said, if you do have any questions, or just want to drop me a line, just share your own insights about this topic, please do. Again, just visit the website, the bbsradio.com/then-reclaiming-authenticity. There you go. So I do hope everybody has a very pleasant 4th of July tomorrow and the 4th of July weekend. Everybody, please be safe. Remember, alcohol and fireworks do not belong in the same sentence. So please do take care to celebrate responsibly. And so until next time, may God hold all of us in the palm of God's hand, and may we continually live in the fullness of the presence of who we are as souls. Bye-bye.
For an answer, or just to leave 1,000 comments, or prodding around to buy a book by Dr. Houck, it's all there. Just wander over to ReclaimingAuthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Pacific, on BBS Radio TV.